From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis, host of this edition of PC USA. February is the month that Americans have designated as Black History Month, a time to recognize the historic contributions of African Americans to the culture and landscape of American history. In this show, we will explore the movement of over 6 million African Americans out of the rural southern United States to cities in the Northeast, Midwest, and West between 1916 and 1970. This movement is known as the Great Migration. While most people are only aware of two major historical periods when discussing African American history, the 246 years of enslavement that ended after the Civil War was over, and the dramatic years of the Civil Rights Movement that was highlighted with protests and riots. However, there is more to the story of African Americans. In a History Channel documentary titled The Great Migration, it was noted that by the end of 1919, some 1 million Black people had left the South. Prior to this, from 1780 to 1910, more than 90% of the African American population lived in the American South. By the end of the Great Migration, just over half of the African American population lived in the South, while a little less than half lived in the North and West. The escape from Southern oppression gave hope to African Americans that they would have a say in democracy, put a spotlight on the injustices of the South, and allow their children to have a better life. In the second Great Migration, which began in 1940 and lasted until 1970, some 5 million African Americans migrated to the Northwest, Midwest, and even West to obtain skilled jobs in the defense industry in cities such as Los Angeles, Oakland, Phoenix, Portland, and Seattle. After the Civil Rights Movement, the trend reversed with African Americans moving to the South. Though the movement was not on the scale of the Great Migration, many African Americans have presently chosen to live in the South due to job growth, a lower cost of living, family ties, improved race relations, and a warmer climate. Well, joining me to discuss the historical phenomenon of the Great Migration is historian Jesse Holland. He is also an author, journalist, TV personality, and professor of media and public relations at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Also joining me is my colleague, Chris Simpkins, VOA's award-winning senior TV correspondent, who is also an author himself, and he has produced numerous feature works on the struggles and contributions of African Americans. Welcome again, both Jesse and Chris, to Press Conference USA.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
Well, first of all, I just want to look at the overall picture of this Great Migration. How significant to American history was it?
Well, if you look at the Great Migration as far as a time period, we know that a lot of it actually begins directly after the Civil War. When the Civil War ended in 1865, newly freed slaves, if they could, left the South by the thousands. They left behind the life they knew in slavery and were hoping to begin a new life elsewhere. But quite a few of them also stayed in the South, hoping to build lives as citizens of America during the Reconstruction period. But after the failure of Reconstruction, when the South started instituting its Black codes and its Jim Crow laws, many African Americans, frankly, realized that they would never be able to lead lives of equality, to be able to find jobs that equaled their intelligence, and frankly would not be able to hold any type of power over their own lives, whether economic or political. So they decided to pick up and leave and search for their American dream in other areas. And we saw a lot of that, especially from the part of Mississippi where I'm from. You saw a lot of people pick up and head to St. Louis or Chicago or Detroit. In that era, that's what we now know as the Great Migration, where African Americans gave up on the idea of economic and political justice in the South and began to leave and explore America and attempt to find those things elsewhere.
And Chris?
Yeah, that's right. Jesse, my grandfather, Jack Atkins, was an attorney, and in the early 1920s, he was a part of the Great Migration, moving from rural North Carolina to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, he arrived there in 1922, but at that time and before that, Tulsa was known as the Black Wall Street. Can you talk a little bit about that and talk about one of the darkest chapters, I think, in African-American history that took place there 100 years ago?
Right. This is something that if you don't know about it, you should know about it. Tulsa, Oklahoma had an area that was called Greenwood. Now, back in this time, about 100 years ago, Tulsa, Oklahoma was a segregated city. But African Americans in Tulsa were actually prosperous. They had their own stores and their own banks and their own schools. But back in May of 1921, the white population of Tulsa, Oklahoma, behind an accusation that was never proven, a African-American man assaulting a white woman on an elevator. The white Tulsans burned and killed and destroyed the entire neighborhood of Greenwood. I was lucky enough to be able to go to Greenwood maybe about 2 years ago in Tulsa. And to this day, Greenwood has never recovered from the race massacre 100 years ago. And of course, on top of everything else, now a major interstate runs directly through the middle of Greenwood, which will keep it from ever revitalizing. But it was one of those race massacres that destroyed African-American prosperity in America. To this day, the people of Greenwood, the neighborhood of Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they've never recovered from the massacre 100 years ago.
Yes, that's a very, very tragic story. After reaching their new destinations, you had also mentioned, you know, moving up to, for instance, Chicago, African Americans were excluded from living in predominantly white neighborhoods of the North and Midwest with clauses written into deeds that prevented them from buying or leasing homes. And some, the only provision made was if the person was a servant. One notable example is Lorraine Hansberry's 1959 play, A Raisin in the Sun, about a black family on Chicago's South Side living in a dilapidated housing project. This became the first play written by an African-American woman to be performed on Broadway. A film version was released, and to this day, the critically acclaimed movie is still very relevant. A Raisin in the Sun also told of the true life discrimination that was experienced by Lorraine Hansberry. Seeking a better life for his family, her father, Carl Hansberry, moved his family from the South to Chicago in the 1930s. Lorraine was 7 years old when they first moved, and she later described a mob descending onto the home, throwing bricks into the house and broken concrete, narrowly missing her head. And of course, there are countless similar stories to this, Jesse, but were African Americans surprised when they reached their destinations that they were not accepted openly?
But I can tell you some of the stories that I heard from my father, who was one of the ones who did not leave, who was not part of the Great Migration. He was one of the ones who stayed home in Mississippi while his brothers and his cousins left for cities like Chicago and Detroit. And I would always hear stories how these people who did migrate would come home with these cars and clothes and these fancy stories. But the reality was that while they were not in the South, some of the same treatment that they received in the South, they found in other places as well. At places like Chicago, places like Detroit, while there were jobs available in those cities, African Americans were still discriminated against and forced to live in certain neighborhoods and excluded from things like schools, political power, suburbs. While they did get away from the racism in the South, in the end, encountered even more racism in the North. Maybe not the exact same, but still the same forms of discrimination and economic exclusion that they face in the South. The only difference was in the South, there were no jobs that were not agricultural jobs for African Americans. In the North, African Americans did find the industrial jobs, but they still didn't find the political and the economic freedom that they were searching for.
Chris?
Yeah, I would like to add to what Jesse just said. And in addition to some of those challenges, new arriving migrants also encountered social challenges from the Black establishment in the North, who tended to look down on these folks coming from the South as less educated and kind of country manners, so to speak. Jesse, I was also wondering, were there attempts to stop the migration from happening? And what did the South look like during the height of this migration, especially in places like you said, Mississippi, where the state was left with just a massive loss of people? How did it impact those Southern states?
Well, what we saw from a lot of these Southern states were attempts to hold on to this a workforce that they could continue to exploit. Some states like Mississippi and Alabama started banning northern newspapers like the Chicago Defender from being brought in the state that would tell stories of availability of jobs in the North. And many times, especially in the Deep South, many African Americans were forced to stay in a form of sharecropping, which was another form of economic slavery, where they would never be able to make enough money to pay off the notes that the white landowners would put on them for housing and for clothes and for food. They would be forced to live and work their entire lives without ever getting out of debt. So the Southern landowners, the people who were profiting from slavery, came up with new ways to keep this underpaid and sometimes undereducated workforce in the South, instead of allowing them to leave and seek their fortunes elsewhere in the country, like any other American citizen would have been able to.
This also leads right into my next question on the Jim Crow laws of the South. These were state and local laws that enforced racial segregation in the South. Can you tell me more about the Jim Crow laws and just the impact that this had on African Americans?
Well, Jim Crow laws were laws set up by Southern states whose only intention was to keep a growing African American population still in servitude. These laws led to things that we now know are called like sundown towns, which were towns where African Americans could not be in public after dark. These led to things like colored and white bathrooms and colored and white drinking fountains and discrimination on public transportation and discrimination on the job. Jim Crow laws were another attempt by the descendants of white slave owners to keep the African American population in a position where they would have no power. Jim Crow laws lasted for a very long time in the South, and we can still see some vestiges of Jim Crow laws even in our laws today. There are people, lawyers and civil rights advocates out there who are still fighting against some of the vestiges of Jim Crow law today.
And on that note, let's take a short break. You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Jesse Holland, historian, author, journalist, TV personality, and professor of media and public relations at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Also joining me is Chris Simpkins, VOA senior TV correspondent. I'm Kim Lewis. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener and Facebook fan, Collins Dilichukwu of Enugu, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. We now return to our program, The Great Migration of African Americans and How It Shaped the Political, Social, and Cultural Landscape of America. My guest is Jesse Holland, along with VOA's Chris Simpkins. Chris?
Jesse, I wanted to ask you about the tensions that were created with the migration, whereas you had blacks living in the South where they made up a good majority of the population moving to these areas to the North and Midwest and West, where they were mixing with whites. And at that time, in cities like East St. Louis, for instance, and other cities, there was racial riots, were there not?
There were racial riots all over the North, as the previous populations of these cities saw African Americans come up to the cities and begin to work and to acclimate themselves to their new environments. But there was a tension also with African Americans in the South who saw their sons and their daughters and their cousins and their grandchildren leave their ancestral land and go off and frankly never come back. So there was always a tension between the African Americans who stayed in the South and attempted to make their lives in the South better and those who picked up and left and come back with stories of a life that those left behind could not even conceive. So there's always been that tension. In fact, I actually wrote a little bit about that in a new comic book I did for DC Comics this past month called Represent. In a chapter called Heritage, I talk about my leaving the South. Now, I know we're talking more about the people who left in the 1920s, but I left the South as well, where my parents still live today on the farm where my father grew up. There has always been these type of tensions between those who leave and those who stay behind. And I think that's partly why we see more African Americans returning to the South these days. As I've always told everyone who knows anything about me, I also intend to return to the South because that's my ancestral home place. But when I was growing up, there were no opportunities that I saw that were available for myself, so I felt like I had to leave as well. And once again, those type of decisions cause tension, but that's the way of the world.
Jesse, you said your parents decided not to leave and to stay in Mississippi. How were their lives over the years in living in Mississippi?
Well, I will tell you, and they're probably better to speak to this than I am, but I will tell you that my parents were both very industrious. They both were public school teachers as well as farmers. They both got their master degrees from colleges and universities. So they both were able to achieve their goals and their dreams. And they have four children, all of whom got their master degrees. So I think my parents will tell you that they had a good life. They were able to achieve what they wanted to achieve without sacrificing the things that they believed in. Now, I will also just briefly say that my parents also left. My parents left Mississippi for 1 year to move to St. Louis, Missouri. But they immediately returned back to Mississippi, to the place where they live today. There are some people whose roots are deep in the soil of the South. And my parents were some of those people. And that was one of the things that I always admired about them. They knew who they were and where they wanted to be. And they made their lives exactly the way they wanted them.
Well, it's nice to hear a positive story in terms of what we've been talking about. Between 1910 and 1930, the African-American population increased by about 40% in northern states. The cities of Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, Baltimore, and New York City had some of the biggest increases in the early part of the 20th century. Tens of thousands of blacks were recruited for industrial jobs, such as positions related to the expansion of the Pennsylvania Railroad. Many of these cities today suffer from unemployment, high crime, police killings of unarmed African Americans, and even biases in housing, healthcare, and education. So what happened over the years that caused this downturn?
Well, you will hear a lot of different reasonings for what we call that downturn. You'll hear the loss of the industrial base, as many of the factory jobs that African Americans moved to the North to get vanished. we always hear stories about Detroit and its incredible auto industry, which is decimated today with many of those same autos being made overseas. We always talk about the loss of the agricultural South, but many of the cities where African Americans escaped the agricultural South from ended up being decimated during the loss of the industrial factories of the North. And when you remove the economic base of a city, then remove the ability of people to find new jobs, you're going to end up with what we saw in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, which was a loss of an economic and political base for a new immigrant population, which was African Americans. So already being forced to live in the poorest neighborhoods, which had the poorest education system, and then losing the industrial base that brought them there, forcing them to live in an area where they have no jobs, no money, no education, is no surprise that these areas deteriorated in the way that they did. And some of the areas are still trying to recover from the loss of that industrial base 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Chris, your thoughts?
I think Jesse is absolutely right. And I think a lot of this is really highlighted now because of what we've seen with the massive economic downturn, the coronavirus pandemic, and that you have many African Americans in big cities, including here in Washington, that are still subjected to living in large public housing blocks and otherwise known as ghettos. There are high unemployment among African Americans, especially now that so many businesses have closed, especially those small black businesses. Jesse, I was just wondering, do you think because of what we're seeing today, we might begin to see the beginnings of a bigger migration that reverses from the big cities back down to what Kim was mentioning called the New South, where there seems to be more jobs and less of the violence and other social ills that African Americans have had to endure in our cities?
I do think you're going to see many changes over the next decade because of the coronavirus pandemic, especially as we improve internet access for everyone in the United States, where you're now no longer required to live in a downtown core to conduct downtown business, where you're no longer required to live two blocks away or three blocks away from the place you work. So I do think that especially as we move forward on electronic communication, we'll see more African Americans moving to areas with a better education system, with a lower cost of living, and where they have a greater connection, an ancestral connection to the land. For example, we see all of these stories about cities like Atlanta blowing up like crazy, the Memphises, the Miamis, the Charlotte, North Carolinas. Those cities have increasing African-American population, not only African-American population, but middle-class African-American population because of the advantages those cities provide and having a pre-existing strong African-American core. I look at the stories that are told by authors like Isabel Wilkerson in The Warmth of Other Suns, and I can see 20 to 30 years from now, authors talking about the renaissance of the New South as African Americans leave cities where their parents and their grandparents arrived during the Great Migration and return down south to the states that their ancestors abandoned.
Well, I just wanted to mention those African Americans that migrated out to the West Coast. For instance, there was Mallie Robinson. She was the mother of five. She took her five kids, got on a train, and took from one train to another train to another train until she reached California with her five kids. And one of them was a baby in diapers. All of her kids, they went to integrated schools. And even though the house that she moved into, there was a cross that was burning on her front lawn. And one of her kids, named Jackie, would go on to earn four letters in athletics in a single year at UCLA. Later in 1947, he became the first African American to play Major League Baseball. Was life different out west than it was in other regions of the U.S. during this Great Migration?
Well, when African Americans moved out west, there wasn't the same industrial base that we saw in cities like Chicago and Detroit. There weren't the huge factories. There weren't the huge meat markets. There wasn't the huge auto industry. For example, there was, however, a great burgeoning defense industry in places like California. So many African Americans left Texas and Arkansas and Missouri and migrated across the country and moved to places like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Oakland, Sacramento, Denver, Seattle. I remember being surprised when growing up when I found out that my grandmother's brothers had moved from Mississippi to Denver and Los Angeles. I didn't even know I had relatives in Colorado and California. But they made great lives for themselves. And when we visited them, I always remembered being surprised how they continued the same traditions that my grandmother had in Mississippi. So while these African Americans did leave the South, they brought parts of the South with them, with their family traditions, their family recipes, and some of the same religious practices that they practiced in the South. So while they didn't have the industrial background that the African Americans who moved to the Midwest and to the North had, they still found jobs in the defense industry, jobs in shipping, jobs in education, and were able to make decent lives for themselves.
Also, what would you say is the legacy of the Great Migration? And looking at the South now, where does it stand in terms of equality?
Well, even with African Americans having left the South in the thousands and thousands of numbers, if we look at the demographics today, Mississippi will still be the first majority black state in the Union by demographics at some point in the next 20 to 40 years. Mississippi will become the first majority African-American state in the Union. So we can see by those numbers that even though the Great Migration brought advantages to our grandparents and our great-grandparents who left the South looking for economic and political power, they were successful. But now there's a reverse as more and more African-Americans look South for those same things, for economic and political power. So I think while the Great Migration helped spread African Americans around the United States, as we go forward into the future, we'll see more African Americans look South again for their ancestral home places and return to the places where our ancestors began.
And Chris, would you like to add another question or comment as we wrap up the show?
Oh, I'd just like to say we talked about all of the hardships that blacks had to endure with the Great Migration and some with even death. But I think one of the more positive aspects of the migration, and Jesse, would you not agree, was the explosion of African-American artists, songwriters, singers, band leaders. And I think about one of the artists, and if our listeners want to take a look, they should look up a great African-American artist Jacob Lawrence, who did a migration series back in the 1940s. I think you'll find some of this artwork fascinating in explaining and what he saw as a young person migrating from the South up to New York. And I'm just so happy that we saw with that great migration an explosion of culturalism that African Americans could spread throughout the country. Is that right, Jesse?
I 100% agree. Many things that migrated from the South along with African American were music like the blues, like jazz from New Orleans, like spoken word poetry and religion. These are things that began in the South with African Americans. And when they migrated out of the South, they became no longer Southern traditions. They became American traditions.
We'll end on that positive note. And I wanted to thank my guest, Jesse Holland, historian, author, journalist, TV personality, and professor of media and public relations at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., and my colleague, thank you, Chris Simpkins, VOA senior TV correspondent. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Hikesville, Maryland. I'm Kim Lewis. Be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.